This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest with me, T. Xiao Ig and Juliet Jacobs. Earlier, our first story was looking at why female world leaders seem more capable during this pandemic. And we sort of discussed the different traits of leadership that we're seeing among these particular leaders where their countries are doing so much better in handling the COVID-19 outbreak. But we're moving on to our second story now, still related to women.
Yes, and we are asking you actually a question over on Twitter, through a Twitter poll. Do Malaysians have a poor understanding of domestic violence and how it should be combated? So far, about 87.4% of you have said, yes, we do have a poor understanding, while another 12.6% of you have said no. So do take that poll, tweet us at BFM Radio, or send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899 if you'd like to weigh in. So it was about 6 days ago when the Deputy Minister of the Ministry of Women and Family Development, Siti Zaila Mohamed Yusof, put up an Instagram video that I guess left quite a few of us scratching our heads. In the video, one of the things that Siti Zaila talks about is keganasan di rumah tangga, or domestic abuse and violence. And she shares her, a few tips on how survivors and perpetrators might be able to cope with it. So firstly, she said, if you're in a possibly hostile situation, sit down, rest, and keep your minds calm. That way, God willing, your anger will subside. If she goes on to say, if you're a husband and hear your wife nagging, just be patient and listen to what your wife has to say, and vice versa. And secondly, if something happens that could lead to pergolakan di rumah tangga or turbulent situations at home, just think about the 1,000 good qualities that your husband or wife might have.
So these so-called tips do seem to trivialize domestic abuse, and these tips have also unsurprisingly been met with some backlash. So in a response to that video by Siti Zaila, Marina Mahathir, among others, tweeted the following: can someone tell this woman that A, domestic violence is a crime in this country, and B, telling an abused woman to sabar doesn't help them, it just extends their suffering. And Sisters in Islam released a statement criticizing the video. They said, this is unacceptable. As the deputy minister, she should be empowering women by affirming that they deserve to live a life free from violence and fear, and to reiterate that women and children's safety are the utmost priority for the ministry.
Yes, and of course, you know, this comes on the heels of the posters that were put up by the Ministry of Women and Family Development. This was on social media about a couple of weeks ago or so, that were highly misogynistic and inappropriate. And I'm sure you all remember the infamous Gelak Manja Doraemon and Jangan Belete ones, which saw massive backlash as well. The ministry did apologize and remove those posters, though, following all of that negative feedback.
Yeah, so all of this couldn't have come at a worse time, because we are hearing about shocking statistics that reveal domestic violence cases have seen a massive surge since the start of the COVID-19 lockdowns. In Malaysia, the ministry's Talian Kasih hotline has seen a 57% increase in calls, and this is only up to March 26th. Now, our movement control order has seen two extensions since then, and there is no evidence to suggest that these numbers would be going down. And the Women's Aid Organization has also reported a 44% increase in WAO hotline calls and WhatsApp inquiries from February to March 2020.
Yeah, and the truth is, these worrying numbers may not encapsulate the overall seriousness of the situation. So Tan Hyang Lee of the WAO has said that not only are these survivors at greater risk because they're stuck at home all day with their abuser, it's also more dangerous for them to seek help because the perpetrators may be monitoring their every move. And every day, domestic abuse survivors are fighting, you know, really harrowing battles at home. Many of them are crying out for help, and many of them are also similarly, you know, afraid to do so. But there seems to be a fundamental lack of understanding by the ministry, and perhaps many other people as well, on the realities of domestic violence.
Yeah, I mean, it's making people, making presumptions that domestic abuse may be part and parcel of every marriage, and that being patient and taking the time to rest can deter domestic abuse and violence. But is this true? So to discuss the misconceptions and realities of domestic violence, I reached out to Sharina Sheriff, Program Manager from Sisters in Islam, and I started by asking her about these assumptions that some people have, that domestic abuse happens during a momentary lapse of judgment, or because one of the partners is irritated by something that the other partner did. So I asked her whether this is true.
You know, what we have to understand is that acting in violence is really a choice. Conflict and tension will always be present in our lives, but it's how you react to a situation that shows, you know, the person that you are. But for many perpetrators of domestic violence, perhaps that's the only thing they know because they grew up with violence in their family or in their community. Domestic violence is really a generational issue. Maybe they themselves were victims of violence. Or maybe it's an internal issue that they're facing, like they have so low self-esteem or they are unable to control their emotions. You know, sometimes it's extreme jealousy and tendency to want to dominate and control because they think they can win with violence. And the intention is always to control or dominate the partner, the wife or the children, whoever, maybe as the victim of abuse. And in our context, also many of us have been brought up to think that it is the right of the man to discipline and teach, his wife and children through violence. So if as a boy you are taught that girls have less value, that you need to give them less respect, then you will grow up thinking that, you know, that you do not need to give your wife the full respect as a complete human being. But to reiterate, at the core of domestic violence is the need to control and have power over another person. Mm-hmm. So in many cases, we see a power imbalance in the relationship. And also, I think a big part of why domestic violence has increased, globally across the world, is that a lot of perpetrators think they can get away with it. There are no repercussions. And they convince, the victims that, you know, either they made a mistake, they did it out of love or compassion, and then it's a cycle of violence from there on. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of victim blaming involved as well. But I'd like to go back to the fact that it is a choice. He chose to beat you, he chose to humiliate you, he chose to deprive you of peace and happiness. Mm. And I just want to point out that majority of cases, the perpetrators are men, so I'm always referring to him. But of course, the situation can be reversed as well.
Mm. And so that obviously points out the flaws in some arguments that, he just did it in the heat of the moment, you know. And of course, as we've recently heard the controversy over the Deputy Minister of Women's suggestion that, try to stay patient, take the time to calm yourself. How do we take that kind of statements, which suggests that just stepping back and calming yourself is the solution to domestic abuse?
I think domestic abuse is quite different from, normal tensions, normal arguments in a relationship. And in many cases of domestic violence that we have seen, it does not need to build up from an argument or a disagreement. In many cases, it's unpredictable. It's quite sudden. There's a sudden burst of anger and followed by violence. And this is also a way to keep the victim, you know, constantly in fear, uncertain of what, you know, whatever she does might trigger the violence. But definitely, I think if a person is a rational person, a person who is aware that maybe an argument is getting too heated, it may lead to an undesirable action, then definitely you should take control of the situation. You know, a lot of couples say, let's take time out, take a break, come back to it when we're less heated. But domestic violence is quite different. Because the motivation behind it is it's not a motivation in an argument. It's a motivation to control and to dominate, to humiliate. You know, those are the reasons for domestic violence.
And does it necessarily have to be in the physical form?
No, there are definitely many different types of violence. It can be inflicted in many ways. We have had calls on sexual violence where the partner humiliates the partner sexually, hurts her, or even rapes her. And then there is financial violence where the abuser controls all the financial resources and sometimes leaves the partner in huge debt. There's psychological or emotional violence, and that's becoming more common in the complaints that we are receiving. And this involves degradation, insult, just to demean the person so that her feeling of self-worth is very low. And lastly, there's social violence, which is, particularly, I think, relevant in our context, where the victim is isolated from resources and particularly connections with other people, like family and friends and so on, so that they become powerless to fight against the abuser. So in the case of domestic violence, you will see a few types of these violence interacting at the same time. And sometimes physical violence is not at all present.
With the current MCO in place, what have you heard about or observed with regard to the escalation of domestic violence?
I think the statistics are out. So the calls have increased. The Talian Kasih hotline has increased by 57%. And I think the calls to other NGOs have increased. I think WAO mentioned 44% increase. So definitely, and across the world as well, this is a trend, an increase in domestic violence. It's the situation of the, staying at home. Obviously, we have to stay at home to contain the spread of the virus. But the confined space for extended periods of time exacerbates conflict. And home confinement is tilting the power dynamic more in favor of the abuser. So, the confinement at home has made things much more serious. And of course, other pressures are bearing down as well in terms of, uncertainty about the future. The news is on the virus is bleak. Your uncertainty about, whether you have an income after this, all this bears down to create more tension within relationships.
And so, is it a false assumption that both partners hold equal responsibility when it comes to domestic abuse or domestic violence?
Well, I don't believe any person can or should take responsibility over another person's violent behavior. There is absolutely no excuse for it. It should not be rationalized by saying, I provoked the person or I said something wrong or I deserved it. There is no excuse for violence and there is no situation where a person deserves to be abused.
So what are the effects, would you say, of ill-informed messaging by the authorities when it comes to the issue of domestic violence?
Well, I think, that goes back to what the victim requires. I think you have to bear in mind that in a situation of domestic violence, the victim has very low self-esteem. She thinks she deserves the violence, the insults. She has absolutely no capacity to determine for herself. She's been manipulated into thinking that she doesn't deserve anything better. So the rhetoric of the whole public space is very important. I think it's a whole community collective effort to say that, we support the victims in protecting themselves. So the narrative of domestic violence must change. We cannot go on telling women to be patient, to smile, to be enslaved to violence We must teach the victims that they have the right to dignity and to respect, to stand up, to be strong, to protect themselves and to stop the violence, and that there will be consequences if a person acts in violence. So I think it's a very important effort that we must make, you know, whether in the government, every single person, there must be a clear and unequivocal message that domestic violence will not be tolerated.
So during this time, with the movement control order in effect, what advice can you give for those who are potentially facing domestic violence at home?
Well, I think the first thing is that the victim of domestic violence needs to realize that what is happening to her is abuse and violence, and that she does not deserve it, and that she has every right to free herself from this situation of violence. And for that, as I mentioned, the support of the community is critical. Family, friends and neighbors, you know, I beseech people around victims of domestic violence to reach out and help these people who are, you know, stuck in their homes and facing violence. And their support just in terms of context is very important. And secondly, because these victims might be closely watched, closely controlled in their movement and in their communication, so they have very little recourse to help. But if the situation presents itself, we call on the victim to reach out for help. So in this regard, there must be readily available support to these victims. So NGOs such as ours, and there are many other NGOs out there that can provide support, counselling, shelter and so on. And in this, I think the role of the public services, the role of the government is also critical because it involves a whole host of public services, public support, such as the police, the social services, JKM, and they all must be able to act in coordination and to act swiftly to protect victims. The women's group have made some demands of this government to tackle the specific situation of the MCO because it happened. I think domestic violence wasn't the support for domestic violence wasn't prepared to deal with this kind of situation. So there must be some action to ensure that all arms of the support system function effectively. And it's also important to widely disseminate information on shelters, to create temporary shelters during MCO. Because obviously, I think a lot of the shelters have become, you know, maximum in its occupancy. Mm. The other area is the legal protection. You know, I mean, a lot of people are unsure because the courts are functioning on a limited basis. So how to get an interim protection order quickly to provide proper resources in terms of social service work, medical attention, counselors, and so on. And I think also financial resources are critical because in the shelters, they also have to take special preventative measures to ensure, you know, the virus doesn't spread. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, the restrictions in movement also add, you know, specific conditions to this. And also a lot of women who have to leave the house quite suddenly, they will have no income in terms of how to take care of themselves, and many of them also bring their dependents, like their children, along with them when they decide to leave the house.
That was Sharina Sharif, the program manager of Sisters in Islam, and that was really a very comprehensive look that she took at the different forms of domestic violence, mm-hmm. and there's a lot that many people are not aware of what's happening in that the secrecy of the home.
Exactly.
And as she pointed out, I think repeatedly as well, this movement control order, where women are confined to their houses, they are most vulnerable at this time.
Yeah, and again, you know, the advice that seems to be coming out doesn't seem to take in all of that into account,
yes,
you know. So, which is why we asked you on Twitter, do Malaysians have a poor understanding of domestic violence and how it should be combated? And a whopping 88.1% of you have said, yes, we do have a poor understanding of it, while another 11, almost 12% of you have said no. And we had a few comments. Kudzding has said that I wanted to press yes, but I accidentally pressed no. So we'll
take that vote.
We'll take that vote then. Lian Jim has said that, you know, it's not just domestic violence, but marginalized people in Malaysia are not aware of their rights and the help that they can get. So even for those who are poor or underpaid or, you know, in this case as well, abuse, they will accept it as their own failures or fate. Help given by the government will be thought of as mercy rather than human rights. And Lian Jim also goes on to say that domestic violence comes in a lot of different forms, exactly what Sherina was saying, yes. And people need to recognize it. You know, getting beaten up by a drunk husband, for example, is not the only, you know, form of abuse. There are different types of verbal abuse. I've met a few people growing up from those situations, and it's affecting their moral decisions. So
yeah, and one thing that Sherina brought up interestingly was even financial violence, where the woman is being financially exploited by her partner. Something that again escapes many of us.
Yeah, and one more message that came in over on WhatsApp. Maggie says that yes, we are turning a blind eye. I strongly suggest that the authorities consult and work closely with psychiatrists, psychologists, and the NGOs who deal with women, you know, such problems, instead of armchair advice. And they should kind of come up quickly with solutions and SOPs on what victims and the police should do when domestic violence occurs. There seems to be a lack of concrete action plan, you know, like enough safe houses or shelters for the victims or the survivors. And domestic violence has actually been a silent pandemic and has been ignored for far too long.
She brings up a very good point. It's we look to the government for systemic changes.
That's right.
For long-term changes that address the underlying socioeconomic issues that make women and children especially vulnerable to violence. We don't need them to be a relationship counsellor.
No,
right?
Right, yeah.
We need them to put in place the safety nets that can then protect women.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of giving this advice is not helpful, because obviously the person is in a bad situation. You need to get them out of that situation before you can then maybe start counselling or whatever. But if that person is in, you know, direct line of abuse, mm-hmm. or, you know, harm,
yes.
The first thing you need to do is get them out of there, yeah. And help them.
And if it was as easy as staying calm and thinking of how great, all the great qualities that your partner has, mm-hmm. Domestic violence wouldn't occur in the first place.
That's
as
right.
Sherina has explained, it is about power. It is about control. Mm-hmm. It is not about how nice you are to each other.
Yeah, and it's not a way to, you know, condone violence.
Yes, absolutely. If you are a survivor of domestic abuse, or you're worried about someone who is, or simply wish to speak to someone confidentially, you can call Talian Kase at 15999 or WhatsApp 019-261-5999. Alternatively, you can call the Women's Aid Organisation or WAO hotline at 037956-3488 or SMS or WhatsApp Tina at 018-988-8058. That's all the time we have for the show today. Please continue to share your thoughts with us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or on our Facebook page, BFM The Bigger Picture. If you missed any part of the show, look up our podcast on bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app, or on Spotify. Coming up after the 3 p.m. news is a repeat of Ringgit and Cents, where Roshan Kanisan will be discussing high dividend stocks with financial planner Joyce Chua. Juliet and I will be taking our leave now, but here's Cat Power and Lana Del Rey with Woman, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.